If you haven't already, please open up your Bibles to Psalm 36. That's where we're going to be, those 12 verses that Gregory read for us. And get your notebooks out. Get ready to take some notes this morning. I know many of you have a notebook, but if you don't, I want to encourage you to have a notebook for sermon notes. Last week when Jeremy was preaching, I was on the front row with my notebook, and I really think it's an important tool in order to get the most out of this time. So I just want to encourage you in that. You know, Jeremy did a great job with Psalm 37 last week, and he mentioned this, but because of the snow day in January, our preaching schedule was thrown off by a week, and so I jumped back and take a look at Psalm 36 this morning because we skipped it. But then the next 2 weeks, we'll kind of get back on track and look at Psalm 38 and 39. And then that will take us through the 30s and we'll conclude our study through the Psalms for this calendar year. But Psalm 36 this morning. There is a three-word message that has so pervaded our Western culture that some of you might even believe that it's in the Bible. It has become the foundational message in our society, one of. It's been said in 1,000 movies, and the idea has so penetrated so deeply into who we are as a people. It's so penetrated so deeply into our identity that we're unable to think of ourselves as being true or genuine unless we do it. Do you know what that three-word message is that I'm talking about? Well, allow me to share with you this morning from the World Wide Web. I've scoured the internet, and it wasn't hard to find many different ways to share this three-word message with you this morning as it's presented to us on a daily basis. Now, I'm going to scroll through a bunch of these. So buckle up and get ready. So up top here, if we can get started. I think it's important to have a dream and to follow your heart. Austin Butler. Listen to advice, but follow your heart. That's Conway Twitty for some of you old folks. Don't follow a trend. Follow your heart. Let's just keep them rolling. Follow your heart and you'll never lose your way. The cost of not following your heart is spending the rest of your life wishing you had. Follow your heart. It's the only compass you need. Choose happiness. Follow your heart. Your heart is the right guide in everything big. There's no path to success. Everyone constructs their own path. The important thing is to follow your heart. Find your niche is my best advice. Thank you, Carol. Don't follow a trend. Follow your heart. I'm here to spread a message of hope. Follow your heart. Don't follow what you've been told you're supposed to do. Trust your own instincts. Go inside. Follow your heart. Right from the start, go ahead and stand up for what you believe in. As I've learned, that's the path to happiness. Follow your heart and make it your decision. Mia Hamm, soccer player. I knew that name. You can't live a lie. You have to follow your heart. Paula, thank you. Break the rules, stand apart, ignore your head, and follow your heart. She even rhymed it for us. She's a singer, that's what she does. Follow your heart, not your fears. If you follow your dreams, it means you follow your heart. If you do follow your heart, I don't think you can go wrong. Celine Dion. Hold on now. Follow your heart because it always knows. All right? Walt Disney, let your heart guide you. It whispers, so listen closely. Follow your heart and listen when it speaks to you. I learned always to follow your heart. There are no rules. Just follow your heart, Robin Williams. Follow your passions, follow your heart, and the things you need will come. Follow your heart. What feels right to your heart is what you should start doing. It's a wild, wonderful world. Follow your heart and let the adventure unfold. I can't read that. Steve Jobs, there is no reason not to follow your heart. Follow your heart, it knows the way. And then last but not least.
Pedro, just listen to your heart. That's what I do.
Even Napoleon Dynamite. Pedro, just listen to your heart. It's what I do. 26 quotes. And listen, I just scratched the surface. I promise. I did that in about 5 minutes. I scratched the surface. Google follow your heart, and you can spend the rest of the day reading all the rest of the quotes. Now, I don't have any scientific data to back up this statement, but that little three-word message has to be one of the most often quoted, commonly posted messages in the world. Follow your heart. How many of you here today thought that maybe that was in the Bible? Let's show your hands. Well, Psalm 36 speaks to this message. If you look at this Psalm of David, it's only 12 verses long, so it's one of the shorter ones that we've studied this year, but I'm telling you, it's just jam-packed, so get ready. There are three sections to this psalm. Section 1 is verses 1 through 4. They're in the form of a lament. Section 2, the next five verses, verses 5 through 9, are in the form of a praise or a hymn. And then section 3, the last three verses, are in the form of a prayer. So there's a lament, and then a praise or a hymn, and then a prayer. So let's start with section 1. And I want to summarize this section in this way. What David does here is he describes for us what I want to call the way of the heart. In these four verses, David describes for us the way of the heart. You see, it's a lament. David laments in these verses about the condition of the human heart. And we must allow for this lament about the condition of the heart to be a warning to us. As pervasive as the advice to follow your heart is in our culture, and I hope you felt that this morning. I intentionally included a lot this morning so that you would feel that. David warns us to think twice before choosing to heed to call to follow it. Think twice about that before you choose to follow it. Let me show you what I mean. Verse 1, David laments. This is a lament. He laments the reality of the fall on the human heart. He writes that deep within the human heart, there's a voice of rebellion. Deep within the heart of every sinner, that's you and me, there's a voice. In this verse, David personifies sin and says, sin speaks to the sinner. Deep within his heart. And here's what he says. Follow your heart with no consequences. Do whatever's right for you. There's no reason to fear God. Author and pastor Timothy Keller has helped me to understand the fear of God. Listen to what he wrote about the fear of God. To have no fear of God is failing to believe not that he exists. You believe there's a God, you just don't have fear of God. So it's failing to believe not that he exists, but it's failing to believe that he matters. To have no fear of God is failing to believe that he matters. To have no fear of God is to be indifferent towards God. To have no fear of God is to shrug your shoulders at God. I want to share with you an illustration of this. It's prior to moving to Lexington. Karen and I did campus ministry at Virginia Tech and at the University of Georgia. And there was a young lady who had graduated from one of our campus ministries. And she had found herself the one. I mean, she had found her guy. She had found her man. And she was super excited about it. The problem with her situation was he was already married. That's a problem. But according to her, it was a bad marriage. And his wife was crazy, and they were going to get a divorce. Now, where I come in is that this young lady's best friend was still in our ministry at the time, and she had a very strong voice into her friend's life. And so she was seeking my counsel as to what she should say to her. And I was so proud of this friend. She lovingly, boldly spoke the truth about God to this former student, letting her know that pursuing a relationship with a married man was not what God had for her and not what God wanted for her. And I'll never forget what this friend told me that this former student said to her. She said, "Well, I'm going to pursue a relationship with this man because what God wants for me," and I'm going to give you the PG version, "stinks. I'm going to pursue a relationship with this man because what God wants for me stinks."
Follow your heart without consequence. Do whatever's right for you. There's no reason to fear God.
And that's just verse one. It gets worse. You see, David describes this process of choosing to do whatever's right for me because what God wants for me stinks. Listen to what he calls it in verse 2. David describes that process as flattery. David says, "You flatter yourself." To use Paul's words in Romans 12, you're thinking of yourself more highly than you ought to think. Remember, sin is being personified here as a voice of rebellion. And so sin is calling out from deep within my heart to perform an act of rebellion, to dethrone God, to usurp his authority in my life, to remove God from his rightful position in my life, the throne of my heart, and instead to take that position for myself. Do you see how we flatter ourselves when we do that? When we choose to follow our hearts without concern for the consequences and without care of what God thinks about our choices, David has a word for that. He calls it flattery. We flatter ourselves. It's nothing but flattery to put yourself in the position to determine what's right and wrong for your life. And the lie and the deception of such flattery is that we actually think that we will do a better job on the throne than God. We think we have a better understanding of what's right and wrong for us. We think we know what's best. David's been there, and he says we flatter ourselves when we do that. And that's just verse 2. It gets worse. This is where David's lament turns into a warning. It turns into a warning here in verses 3 and 4. You see, because we don't belong on the throne of our hearts. That position is not for us. And so verses 3 and 4, they serve as a big do not enter sign on the throne of your heart. It might sound really nice to be in charge of what's right and wrong for you. It might sound really good to be on the throne of your life, but we need to heed the warning of David here. What he shares with us in verses 3 and 4 is what happens to someone who dethrones God and makes themselves the king of their own heart. David warns us. That position is God's and God's alone. In verses 3 and 4 is what happens to a person who listens to that voice of rebellion, takes charge of their hearts. Listen closely to what happens to them because it happens gradually. It actually starts at the end of verse 2. We initially become a people who are just unable to detect or hate sin. Then we turn into a people who are unable to speak truth, make wise decisions, or to do good. Finally, we grow into a people who are fully committed to a life of rebellion. What a contrast verse 4 is to some of the other Psalms of David. I think of Psalm 63, verse 6. David writes, "On my bed I remember you, God. I think of you through the watches of the night." Yet here in verse 4, instead of thinking about God, plots evil and commits to rebellion. Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 9, Jeremiah laments that the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? And if what Jeremiah laments is true, then why would I ever choose to follow my heart? Allow me to plead with you this morning, this pastoral advice based on the lament of David in Psalm 36. Do not follow your heart. Don't do it. But I just don't want to tell you what not to do. I also want to give you an alternative. It's a better option. You see, there's better advice. Our culture says follow your heart. I'm saying don't listen to our culture. There's better advice. Instead, David in Psalm 36 says, know God's heart. Don't follow your heart. That's the warning of verses 1-4. Instead, know God's heart. That's the praise of verses 5-9. So the next time that you're inundated with that little three-word message to follow your heart, say, not me. Not interested. And instead, let it challenge you to know God's heart, because that's it. I'm telling you, that's what it's all about. It's not follow your heart, it's know God's heart. And let's look at God's heart here in verses 5-9. The second section is a hymn or praise all about the heart of God. Let's read these. This is so good. Your love, O Lord, reaches to the heavens. Your faithfulness to the skies. Your righteousness is like the mighty mountains. Your justice like the great deep. O Lord, you preserve both man and beast. How priceless is your unfailing love. Both high and low among men find refuge in the shadow of your wings. They feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your river of delights. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light we see light. And here's how I want us to think about it this morning. This is where I'm going to get to use my biology degree a little bit. You see, the human heart is made up of four chambers. There's the right and left atrium. Those are the upper chambers of the heart. And then there's the right and left ventricle. Those are the lower chambers. And each chamber of the heart plays an important role in the functioning of our hearts. All four chambers must work together in order for our hearts to work properly. You follow me? It's the biology lesson for the day. Well, in these verses, David is saying that the heart of God is also best understood to have four chambers. Each chamber playing an important role. Each one functions together to make up the heart of God. And so to really know the heart of God, you have to know all four chambers of the heart. And so I want to take a look at each chamber with you this morning. Let's begin in the first chamber. It's found in the first part of verse 5. It's love. Love. I'm going to date myself a little bit with this illustration, but there was a television commercial that would come on when I was a kid, and I can remember like being mesmerized by it. Some of you are going to look at me like, I can't believe you were actually mesmerized by that. But I was. I remember watching it in disbelief. It was just amazing to me. But the commercial was for a product called Crazy Glue. And the product still exists, I think. It's a type of super glue. And I think the tagline was that the glue works like crazy, spelled with a K. But in this commercial, and some of you will remember this, but in this commercial, this guy had a construction helmet. And they just attached something to the top of it. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was like a little piece of wood or something they attached to the top of this guy's construction helmet. And so this guy, he takes just like one line of crazy glue. He's like, bleep, the top of this construction helmet. And then he puts the construction helmet on. And then he like hangs from this beam. And then he does this chin up and attaches the helmet to the beam. And, I mean, what I can remember as a kid, he's probably like 20 stories up, right? I mean, in my mind, that's what it was. And then he lets go of the beam, and then he quickly, like, grabs his helmet so that he doesn't, like, you know, he's not attached to his helmet other than this. But his helmet is crazy glued to this beam, and it holds this guy up, suspended 20 stories up at least, in the sky. And it's just amazing to me. Anybody remember that commercial? Yeah, I mean, it was just unbelievable. It was magical. It was crazy, right? I mean, that's some serious, strong glue. But I thought about that commercial this week. It came to my mind because one commentator defined the love of God here in verse 5 as love with super glue on it. Love with super glue on it. And I really like that because to know God's heart, you first need to know that it's a heart of love. And it's not love like the culture defines love. It's love with super glue on it. This is that great Hebrew word, hesed. It occurs 245 times in the Old Testament, but it's really difficult to translate into English. The NIV here just uses the word love in its translation, and I think that's a big mistake because, I mean, it can't just be translated as love. It's bigger and better. It's bigger and better than our little English word love can mean. The ESV translates it steadfast love. And so at least they're making an effort. The New Living Translation translates it unfailing love. And it's getting a little bit closer. Each translation indicating that love just doesn't cut it. It's something more than just love. That I had the privilege this past week to spend a morning at a prayer breakfast. It was a prayer breakfast here in Lexington for preachers and pastors and ministers. I spent about 3 hours one morning this week with a group of about 60 of us. Praying for one another, praying for Lexington, praying for our university, praying for our churches. It was just a great time. And I was at a circular table with about 5 others. And to my right was my new friend, pastor here in town named Jason. And I love praying with people because, man, you get to experience kind of one another's heart language. It's very intimate. What I loved about how Jason prayed was this was just kind of in a time of adoration and worship in our prayer time. And Jason would say something like, Lord, we just are so thankful for your love. And then he'd go, And I love that. It was that little, And every time he would say, Lord, you're just so mighty and glorious. And you go, And you know, when you're praying around a table and you're kind of waiting for your time to kind of jump in and be a part of the prayer, but you knew if he said, like he wasn't done, he's coming back, but he needed to stop. That was like a pause. That's like a Selah in the Psalms, right? He needed to kind of pause and savor what was just spoken. And I love that. I love that about praying with him. And that's how I think about hesed. Hesed is love with a It's different. It's not the love of our culture that's all about you today and then has forgotten about you tomorrow. It's love with super glue on it. And so it's important to know that difference when it comes to the heart of God. In fact, some words are so difficult to define that it's better to describe them than it is to define them. And so that's exactly what David does in this psalm. After listing the 4 chambers of the heart of God, he comes back in verses 7 and 8 to describe hesed in 2 very specific ways. And let's look at those. In verse 7, he says, how priceless is your hesed. This time, if you have the NIV, it does a better job of translating it as unfailing love. And then here are the 2 descriptions. First, he says, people take refuge in the shadow of your wings. That's a great image in the Old Testament. In the book of Ruth, Boaz described Ruth's coming to Bethlehem as her having taken refuge under the wings of the God of Israel. Jesus in Matthew 23 describes his desire for Israel to seek refuge under the protection of his wings. This is a powerful description of Hesed. It comes from the farmyard. The original hearers would have been very familiar with it. A hen, when faced with danger, will gather up her young chicks under her wings to keep them safe. There have even been recorded instances of a hen faced with fire collecting her young chickens under her wings, and when the fire does its worst and dies down, you'll find a dead hen with live chickens underneath its wings. That's Hesed. That's love with super glue on it. That's love with a The second description's in verse 8. It says, they feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your river of delight. So this is another powerful description of Hesed. It comes from a culture of hospitality. The Jewish people were wonderful hosts. Hospitality was built into their DNA. Literally, the word translated abundance is the word for oil or fat. The image of the river of delights represents this ever-flowing, never-ending abundance of goodness. Hope all of us have a host or a hostess in our life who has provided for us in this way. Does someone come to mind? There are several I could mention here, but this morning I'll just mention Karen's grandmother, Nick. You know, it wasn't enough for her to just feed you. You had to not be able to move when you were done. She was a hostess with the mostess. But that's the imagery here. Hesed is hospitality to the nth degree. It's a description of ever-flowing, never-ending abundance. That's Hesed. That's love with super glue on it. That's love with a oomph. And here's the thing. As great as Hesed is, and make no mistake, it's great. In fact, it's so great that it's hard to define and to describe. Yet, it's only one of the chambers that makes up the heart of God. The heart of God is not just Hesed. And I think this is very important for us to understand, because God is love, and God's heart is so much more than just love. Now, if you think of the right atrium as love, then the left atrium, the connecting chamber of God's heart to love, is faithfulness. That's the second part of verse 5. The love and faithfulness of God are paired together in the Bible 10 different times. In fact, in Psalm 85, verse 10, the psalmist writes that love and faithfulness meet together. You see, God is not going to tell someone that he loves them and then not remain faithful to them. That's not the heart of God. It's a package deal. His love for you and his faithfulness to you go hand in hand. And as often as these two chambers of God's heart are paired together, the bottom two chambers of God's heart, the ventricles, connect with one another in the Bible 76 different times. These two chambers are righteousness and justice. That's verse 6. Now, I want to say two things about these chambers of God's heart. First, these words, righteousness and justice, are not so much meant to be understood as legal terms as they are relational terms. And I think that's very important. Just like love and faithfulness are relational, their heart they deal with the heart. So are righteousness and justice. They have to do with relationships. They're heart words. They have to do with relationships between God and man and relationships between man and man. So that's important. But second, these words are almost interchangeable, but there's a slight difference I think worth noting this morning. And this is way oversimplistic, but I think it's helpful. Righteousness means that God is always right. And justice means that God always does right. Righteousness means that God is always right. Justice means that God does right. You see, righteousness is about a state of being right, and justice is about a state of doing right. And so you can see how, too, they go hand in hand. You can think about it this way. Jesus came to make us righteous. It's a state of being. But Jesus also came to call us to justice. It's a state of doing. And so these two chambers are just as much a package deal as the top two chambers. And all four chambers work together to make up the heart of God. Love and faithfulness, righteousness and justice. And with this hymn, David encourages us to know the heart of God. Because reflecting upon the heart of God, meditating upon the heart of God, thinking about the heart of God will change our hearts. And then the third and final section is in the form of a prayer. David concludes the psalm with a prayer, and it's a prayer. Here's the prayer summarized. It's a prayer for the ways of God's heart, verses 5 through 9. It's a prayer for the ways of God's heart to continue. And for the ways of the wicked heart, verses 1 through 4, to come to an end. That's his prayer. May the ways of your heart, God, continue. May they gain traction here on earth as they are in heaven. May they gain traction in my heart. May they gain traction in my home. May they continue on and on and on here in this place, in our church, in our community. And may the ways of the wicked heart come to an end. May they lose momentum in our world. May they lose force in our community. May they become non-existent in my life. May I no longer hear that voice of rebellion yet and only hear your voice. That's his prayer. Do not follow your own heart. Instead, know the heart of God. And you know, there's nothing that reveals the heart of God better than the gospel of Jesus Christ. All four chambers of God's heart meet together on the cross. Isn't that amazing? The love that reaches all the way to the heavens, the faithfulness all the way to the skies, the righteousness to the mountains, the justice to the deep, and they all come together and meet at the cross. All of it. The immensity and the enormity of all of it is found in the person of Jesus Christ hanging on the cross. So this morning, if you're here, and you do not know God, then my encouragement to you is to look to the cross. Look to the cross, because there you will see his love. and you will see his faithfulness, and you'll see his righteousness, and you'll see his justice. And if you're here this morning and you want to know more about God and his heart for you, then I would love an opportunity to share more with you about the saving message of the gospel. Let's stand together and sing. Please come.